ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week I have Coach Gio, Coach Frank. For majority of the episode, in the last 15 minutes, Coach Skyler jumps on also. Now, as we go through this episode, I hope you guys enjoy this as much as I do. I feel like there's so much learning going on for me. I hope you guys can feel that and enjoy this episode. Now, with that being said, let's start this chat and head to the pitch. So, and this is where this is my lack of understanding of all the leagues then, mostly because I'm not into it and I do read as much as I can, but your team just went to regionals, Gio, right?
Yes.
And what league is that in then?
Since that's not USYS. So that system has a few different leagues that filter into that.
Okay.
And that's the FCL, the FDL, and the NL Pro. So there's three different leagues that fit into that with different categories. Okay, I'm in the FCL, and they won't allow me to get into the FDL because of a lot of the BS that we talked about. So now I qualified for the NL Pro because I won the FCL. So I will play an FCL and NL Pro. The NL Pro is a new league that was created that's a national league. So we will play our whole league. We're going to play it like tournament weekends all over the country. So that league is, I'm going to go play three games, four games in Florida, three, four games in California, three, four games in Arizona. And then, like, who wouldn't want to be a part of that? The GCL hasn't been a part of anything like that. Like they're finally trying to start jumping on the boat, because for the longest time, you know, and I'll say it right now openly on the line, the soccer world here is ran by people that when they started this, the game wasn't where the game is at. Those people need to step down, get out of the way, and allow us, the next generation, to take over and take soccer where it needs to be taken. Because some of these leagues and some of these tournaments, they're ran by people that haven't coached the game in 30, 40, 50 years. But they've been making so much money off of this, so much money off of delegating. They own the league. They delegate it to whoever you report for your schedules and your calendars, and they rake in so much money. But when's the last time they stepped down and walked in these leagues? Who knows when? And these are all things, Ian. Like, you know how passionate I am about it. I'm a player that grew up in the system that now is trying to coach in this system. And it was wrong before, but I don't feel it was as wrong. Like, now I think it's completely broken.
And that's the thing. It's like, I was talking to a parent recently where Landon's at the lovely age of U9, but he plays at a U10 level. So he's a 2014 playing with 2013s. And these parents, because we're getting to the point, we're signing year-long contracts with coaches. And like, I want to know your game plan and what leagues you want to go play in. I mean, yeah, he's not hitting Classic League yet, but there's Junior Classic League. There's all these other leagues he can go play in. What is your game plan for him long-term over the next 2 years, 3 years? And I've only had two coaches that have actually told me their game plans for their teams for the next year and the year following, as long as they can keep numbers. It doesn't deal with anything else other than that. And as a parent, it's like, I get asked by a parent, like, what do you think of that? What of this league? And I go, honestly, Classic League is dying, sadly. And there's all these other leagues that you have to go pay attention to. I go, the big one now is ECNL and MLS next. And I go, those are the two biggest leagues in the country for the big super clubs. I go, but the problem is that all the smaller clubs don't have access to them because they're being excluded from them. And he goes, then what do you recommend? Because I don't want to have my kid to go play in tournaments out of state every weekend or every other weekend all year long or one weekend a month. I go, you have to go find a coach that wants to develop your player right now. I go, he's 10. He'll be 11 next year. I go, you have to find one that will develop. And you have you given this coach a chance in the past? Have you, what he has done now? And what is his mantra? I go, is it the same as it was the beginning of the last season that you joined, or have you tried any other coaches? And it's like, you can show the horse where the water is, but you can't force him to drink it type of mentality in our society. It's because no one wants to make the change, and no one wants that coach that will talk hard and honest. And I think that's what you're, even me as an adult, I struggle with hearing the honest answer because it's not always what I want to hear. And it's like, I know that Gio, I live and breathe by what you tell me because I trust you wholeheartedly. And that's the thing. It's how do you develop these parents to change the culture? And that's the problem. It's like you're saying with Classic League, it's dying, but how do we correct those leagues then? There's more options, which is great, which creates competition, but how do you get your players recognized then?
The tournament thing, I think, is a big cloud of smoke for a lot of things. You know, I believe for you to travel to the tournaments, I think you're supposed to earn that. And for me, it's first you got to win in your backyard.
Right.
And then when you win in your backyard, then you start going out of town, driving distance. And then that drive becomes a little further. And then once you want, like every time you win, you can go a little bit further. And I see some of these teams using going to Vegas as a way to draw people, or I'm playing in Surf Cup, or I'm doing this cup and that cup. And, you know, another thing is getting accepted and going to those tournaments. And another thing is going out there to compete and win those tournaments. And sometimes some of these people get sold all the smoke and mirrors and they go over there and then they realize, oh, wow, it's tough. But I just signed this. It's the first month of I'm 1 month in. I still have, 10 months more to go. And now you're in a whole different battle because people were so excited to sign to go to Las Vegas or to go to Surf Cup. And, asking them a question like, OK, what did they do to get to Las Vegas Memorial Day Cup? What did they do to get to earn San Diego Surf Cup? And if they can say nothing, we just applied, then that tells you a lot right there. If a coach can tell you, well, shoot, we got our butt kicked around a DFW for a little while, finally started winning. So we went and looked for fights in San Antonio, Austin, Oklahoma. Oklahoma's probably easier than San Antonio, Austin. So if you're a team that's barely starting to win, you go to Oklahoma first, and then you go win in Oklahoma. After you go win in Oklahoma, then you could go down south, and then you could start going. And if they tell you a story like that, that goes to show you that that's a team that's been built to go compete out of town and not using it for smoke and mirrors. First off, second off, no 8-9-year-old needs to go play in Las Vegas Cup from Texas. Mm-hmm. No 6-7. I see these 2015 teams and 2014 teams in Las Vegas Cup. And I'm like, man, y'all tripping. Like, ain't nobody going to come look at them. Like, in my day, you had to earn that. And when I played, you were 15, 16 years old when you got to travel, because the only reason you were going to travel was to get looked at by colleges, not to go on vacation, not to go get drunk on the strip while our kid played a U8 game, and it's like, also, what life are you looking for? Because some of these teams are looking for that Facebook, Instagram life. And if that's what you're looking for, that's where you want to go. If you want what's best for your kid, traveling to Las Vegas at 5, 6, 7 years old, I don't think that's it. And I don't know if you agree with me on that one, Frank, or not, but that's just my personal opinion.
No, I agree with you completely on that. I mean, who's going to look at the really younger players? Nobody.
You hit the nail right on the head.
Yeah. It's all vacation. It's all vacation. Parents look at it. Oh, we get to go to the tournament. Kids get to stay here, they have babysitting, oh, then we're going to go here. That's all it is at that. And that's what we always bring it back down to. It's the parents. The parents have to make the decision. Is this what they want? Or we want to do it because we get to go to Vegas as well. No kid at that age should be traveling anywhere outside of the DFW, period.
Period. There's good teams here.
Exactly.
I mean, once they start getting to select and they're 10, 12, 14 years old and they're getting invited to regionals and nationals, perfect. As they get a little older. But like the teams that I have, we started off just like that. We couldn't win games here. Why am I going to take you out of town to not win games? Hey, you earn your stripes here and then you can go pick a fight somewhere else. DFW is one of the best places to play anyway. You go to a local tournament here and you randomly see ODP, Mississippi and Oklahoma and Kansas. And you're like, bro, this is just a regular tournament that we just wanted to pick up for just to sharpen up games. And
they don't realize that there's so many teams that come from out of state, out of town, just to play here in the DFW. It's crazy.
There's teams from Oklahoma that are in leagues, teams from Louisiana that are in leagues that the league, like the RPL and the NPL, does a schedule for them that it's like tournament weekends where they play 2 or 3 games in a weekend and they're coming from Shreveport and they're staying the night just to play in regular leagues because there's no competition like the DFW competition.
Yeah. Now just imagine if cost wasn't an issue, how much better that competition would be, because that cost to play for a select team, for playing these leagues, if that wasn't a factor, there are so many teams and so many games that I watch constantly where I see players that are amazing, amazing talent. But unfortunately, that's all it will be. They will end up playing on Sunday league teams as well because it's not there. It's not for them. And especially in the Fort Worth area, in some parts of Arlington, Forest Hill, that area is extremely, extremely hot for young talent.
Oh, boy, you ain't lying.
It's extremely hot. That's one of the reasons why I started my adult team there. And that's why I have most of my players 16 years old. None of them ever played club because they couldn't afford it. None of them did anything. But then they got out there. Some of them went to college because of that. So it's so underlooked, that area in the DFW, that I mean, maybe, you know, one of these leagues can have a more affordable bracket to it, to where these teams can actually play and compete and then jump up by merit, just pro rel, and then cut their fees, you know. But something needs to be implemented to where it gives everybody an opportunity. Just look at the bigger picture. The U.S. soccer-wise has grown so much because they give these younger players so much opportunities. Now, if that pool of players that is so small expanded to include everybody who actually wanted to play and could play, how much better would it be?
It'd be phenomenal. When I talked to Dutch FC, Wilco, he was telling me in soccer developed countries, every club would have maybe two teams per age group. And so you aren't getting maybe three, depending on how it is, but they're not going to have more than that because they can't provide true development to all the players. And the player, like he broke it down to be a star player on the top team may not be a star player on the B team. He may be a playmaker now. And the playmaker on the B team may actually be a star player on the A team. You just don't know where they line up. And it gives you the chance to move players around. And I guess I'll say it here. I have thought long and hard how to fix league play because I feel like the issue is like we have what? This Texas the size of, I don't remember what, how many countries in Europe. But if we just broke Texas down to six to eight different regions and just had our own little leagues in our areas for promotion, relegation, and then you take your top two teams or top team from every region and have them go play in a tournament to figure out who's the best team in the state. And then you create an all-star team and try to find different teams to go play on this on a national level. But the issue comes down to, and this is what Wilco pointed out, it was who gets the credit and who gets the money. It's not about the players. It's about who gets the credit and who gets the money. And we stop worrying about that. I think we could go compete with, like you said, these kids that can't afford it can now go afford it because you're taking out part of the cost of it. And it's like, how much would it cost to start a league? And how much would it cost to run a league? If it's truly what it's designed to do, to promote the best players in the region or the area, why is it costing families $1,000, a team $2,000 to go play in a local league? Because you have to pay for your league fees. Then you have to go play for the field fees. Then you have to go play for the reffing fees. Why aren't they going out and finding ways to reduce costs so we can have the best talent? And if we find a model that works, it can grow.
Exactly. Well, I mean, like, perfect example, like, and I'll pitch it to Gio. Look, Gio, like, just here in Fort Worth, we have plenty of fields that are constantly not being used. Now, imagine if there was a league that started similar to Classic League, but the fees were half, if not half of that, and you provided it to all the players and all the teams that are out there. I guarantee that some of those teams that would win those divisions could compete and give them a run for the money for any of these other leagues out there. The cost would be very minimal. Field rentals maybe run you during the day $35 to $45 an hour. At night, $65 to $95 an hour. Any field in Fort Worth, Mathville, and Arlington. That is the field cost. Referee fees, yes, they have gone up because the demand, because there's not enough referees. Why? Because they run away because of the parents and they get younger and younger. So there's that. But actual cost to run a league, I can honestly give you an estimate. It would be maybe 5,000 to about 8,000 or less than that. Field cost, that's a very minimal cost. Insurance cost for the fields, very minimal. A lot of that falls onto the teams themselves, which any coach can get for $20, $30 a month, pretty much. There's some organizations that where if you sign up with them, they give you that for free. It includes in your membership. So everything is doable. Bottom line is people just want to make the money. But imagine that, Gio. How many amazing players will we not see here in the area?
It would be ridiculous, man, because the area, they're getting their players stolen and they're getting the FC Dallas tag on them. There's been players that been multiple players that come out of more of this general area that had that, like, you know, players like Oscar Romero that played with the North Texas SC and he played in Mexico and stuff like that. A lot of people think he came out of Dallas. No, he came out of Fort Worth. He came out of Forest Hill. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he came out of Triple Tech, like that, like he came out from schools like that. And, you know, these big clubs put their name on them. There's kids like that everywhere, dude. I found that out when we did Inocentes. Random kids showing up. Mm-hmm. We thought we had a good team, and we didn't think we were going to need anyone. And then we did open tryouts, and some of these random little kids that choose, like you said, that are playing for their high school, that are 18 years old, that have never played select in their life, and they're walking up, and they can ball.
Exactly. They can
ball. So, Frank, since you have more experience in this, and this was, I sent it to Gio the other night because I am so tired because I had this conversation with another director of coaches. And this is where my brain thinks is that half our problem in our country, there's no promotion relegation. Every parent, even ECNL, does not have promotion relegation. You're in forever. And that's what's wrong. The club makes the decision on who, what team goes in. It's not based on merit. It was a long text, but if you want to do that, it's like, I go, you create little regions within the state of Texas. You can even do it in DFW. You could have Northeast, North, Southwest, West, all, you can break it up into six regions and have a true competition within the regions. And any club can come in. I guarantee if you went out and promoted this to businesses, local businesses, and say, here, this is what we're doing. We're going to create four tiers of teams that anyone can come play in. Our goal is to reduce the cost almost to nothing. Then you can go out and handpick your refs that you want. Because if you have this a small enough league where you can say, listen, if your parents misbehave, you're out of here. We aren't going to put up with it. Let the refs do their job and stop harassing them. There's a difference between small heckling here and there, but it's to the point where refs are being ran off the field. And how can they learn to ref on the other side of the equation? So if you really nip it in the butt, pay the refs well, so you get the best refs coming in, and then you create up this little region, then you have promotion, relegation in all the groups, and you make it, if they only have one team in that age groups, great, come play. You don't have to have five teams or two teams in every age group to come compete, and it's going to cost you $5,000 per team to come in. Like you're saying, make the cost low, but I guarantee you can go get businesses to promote it and to pay for it. I can guarantee you can probably get it done for free. And then you can get a local college to promote it, to say, look, we're going to hold our tournament, our final tournament at such and such college. I guarantee you a college will be fighting over that because they'll get all the free kids coming in to play there and they can have scouts there. I mean, you don't know who will be showing up then. And I guarantee you a college will be willing to promote a local league finals in the area. Because it means Texas is proud of the players that they have from Texas. I guarantee you they will be jumping all over this and they'll be fighting over who will be hosting the finals of all these games at their college, because that means the college is getting recognition because this league play is being played there. And you could probably get, like I said, you get enough local businesses, the league could be free. And the only person you'll have to pay any job to, any real money to, is a marketing person to go out and hunt down businesses. Like, this is where my brain has been for 3 weeks now. This is all I have thought about. And I sent Gio my notes for this. And I think it can be done on a state level, even.
It can be. It's just a matter of it getting kicked off and running it right. Because the moment that individuals start wanting to make money off of it, then that's where everything starts going sideways. And cost increase, non-existing cost increase. The cost will always be the same. I can tell you in the last 4 years that I needed to rent fields for my semi-pro team, for any other team that I've coached, cost has only gone up from $5 to $10, anywhere in between there. Some have stayed the same. Now, you know, the cost for lease keep going up every year, right?
Right.
So it's all about just making that money.
And that's been my argument is how do you... This is where you have to have board of directors. And this is the other side of this argument is that if you really want the best teams to develop, is having conversations like we're having now, but not parents, not players, the coaches within the leagues. So you guys can discuss what you guys are doing and what's working. So you guys can build the better players. This is my opinion, not coming from a coaching background, but you're sharing what's working. And you might have a player that doesn't connect with you, but might not connect well with Gio, but might connect great with Frank. You might want to go try this coach. We're in the same league, but he might connect better with him. And you're sharing your players with each other. And I don't care what anyone says. This is what's going on in Europe. I know it's going on in Europe.
But see, that's another issue there because a lot of coaches don't like each other. They don't look at the development of the players. Like me, I might not like a coach as a person, but he might be a great coach. I might not go hang out with them after a game, but I will send them players. See, for me as a coach, if this player is not developing the way that they should be with me, and I'm doing my best, sometimes a player just doesn't click with the coach. A coach is more than a coach. A coach is a mentor. He's also plays a little psychologist in there. A lot of these kids, some of these kids do not have stable homes. So they look at coaches as father figures, mother figures. But some of these coaches don't want to take that role. They just want to coach. So that's what I'm saying. Sometimes players don't click with the coaches. I will send a player to a different coach. And I tell my parents that every year before signing day, I will release your player to go play for another team. And if I feel there's a better option for him, I will not hold any player just to keep my numbers or just because I know he's a good player and he'll play even though I know he won't develop the right way. That's not me. I was raised and played that way where they kept me even though they didn't develop me the right way. My father, he developed me on his own. Not even as a coach, as a parent playing 20 plus years, he developed me as a player. None of the coaches developed me. I became the player that I became because of my father and my mother. They all played soccer when they grew up. My mother played in the first organized soccer leagues in Mexico City for females. So she was an amazing striker, you know, but I didn't want to make the same mistakes. I did not want to make the same mistakes. So as a coach, like the way I was raised, players need to develop where they're better developed. If they're not with me, I might send them to Gio. If not Coach Gio, coach whoever. But that needs to be the mentality. And unfortunately, it's not. It's all about me, my team, my money, my record, everything. It's all about me.
And I think that's the problem with our play-to-play model here. So when you go to Europe, it's the big clubs that are sponsoring these, and they have full say on what coach is doing what. And if they don't like your personality, you're gone from coaching. And we don't have, I'll use the English Premier League, their system, they have what? In the city, what is it? I looked it up one time. They have, in England alone, professional club, it's like 68 teams inside of England. That's like putting 68 teams in the state of, what is it? Illinois, I think is the size of, it would be the equivalent of. Could you just imagine 68 MLS teams in the state of Illinois for size reference? And here we have the state of Texas where we have MLS teams. We have what, three? Houston, Austin, and FC Dallas. So could you imagine 68 MLS teams in Texas? Why can't we have that mentality of where we're sharing what's best for the players and not, and then having that culture around it? I think that's the other side, is teaching parents culture of soccer. It's not football culture. Soccer is a different beast than any other sport, I'm coming to realize. We just have Americanized it or bastardized it into becoming an American style sport. And it's not, that's not how it is in the rest of the world. I don't know if you guys have, if you guys understand what I'm trying to say, or if I've just rambled too long.
Well, no, I do. Like I know in Europe, some clubs, they're academies. They don't charge players anything.
Right.
Because they see it long-term. Okay. Out of these group of 30 kids, maybe 10 or five of these will become professional players. They look at the bigger picture. Unlike here, I think the only team that, the professional team in the area was just FC Dallas, but they have North Texas Soccer Club. I think they have an academy. I'm not sure if they do, but I think that is the only true pipeline in the area that there is. But still, you know, it's all about the money with them as well.
Right.
They need to sit down and actually look at the future of the sport. It could be really great. We could have a World Cup within, what, the next 2-3 World Cups maybe, if we get our head out of the dark side.
For real.
And that's why I think you guys are talking, like, I didn't realize how inexpensive it would to be around a league. But like I said, if you get it, so the leagues are relatively inexpensive. And if you get even to the point of sponsorships in the local communities, I mean, could you imagine if you're able to raise $1 million to go start a league and say, okay, we're going to provide all your jerseys for the league. We're going to provide making sure you guys have everything else for the league is free. Just show up with your team. I think that would make FC Dallas and everyone else look twice at what the heck are they doing wrong? Because I guarantee you're going to get the best players on those pitches when you have those matches.
You know, there was a league like the one we're talking about several years ago. Maybe, let's see, my daughter is, so maybe about 8-9 years ago in Fort Worth, and it was run by the Boy Scouts. Boy Scout, Fort Worth Boy Scouts. I have to look for the picture of the logo, but it was run like that. Very minimal cost. They played anybody who wanted to play. They had their fields. I think for the entire season or league, it was like less than $200 for the team. Referee fees were, I think, like $20 a game. But it's like, it's doable. It's just, you know, teams just leave because it's just, I don't know. That's kind of getting me ahead of it.
But this is what my brain thinks. It's as a parent that has a kid, two young kids entering into the sport, I want them to have the greatest opportunity, even if they decide. And if my son, who's a soccer head right now, it's like you're talking about what foot take the ball off. He's sitting here reading Soccer IQ right now the other night. And that's what he was literally out here discussing with us before he went to bed that night. Was in the book, they talk about making sure you pass to the right foot. If not, they're going to have to do X, Y, and Z to get back into position. I'm like, yeah, exactly. Just like in your private coach lesson, this, just like in your practice, this is what they talk about. Receipt. And he goes, yeah. And I see how important it is. And I don't think the resources out there are enough for our society. It's like you said, you talked about ballers coming out that have never played more than high school because they can't afford it. I was talking to someone months ago now, and they said, if until we get soccer being played in the poorest communities, in the poorest communities of the country, even in our state city, if you want to keep it local and easily accessible for them to set up games, soccer will never take off.
Exactly.
I shared with Gio when we talked, I think it's called urbansoccer.com. And what they do is they design like little mini 4v4 fields that the cities can develop and put into their places. If you go to any park, what do we always have? We have basketball courts, we have baseball fields. We could technically put a soccer field because they normally put two baseball fields in over top of the two baseball fields, but there's no soccer anywhere.
It doesn't need to be real soccer.
No.
Yeah. Be like,
I mean,
like
anywhere like you can Europe. Go.
Like in Europe, where they have the basketball courts, that in Mexico, it's actually the same thing. I'm sure you've seen this in the DF, where they have the basketball courts, and at the bottom of the basketball court with the post, it's not a straight post. It's a post that's a soccer goal. Mm-hmm. So now that allows kids to play essentially futsal, but it's street soccer. I mean, that's what it is. And, you know, you go to Spain and, you know, that's where my relationship is. And I'm blessed to be able to go out there often. Some of their basketball courts are very similar to they're in the same space where they're playing 5v5 pickup basketball. The kids can play 5v5 pickup soccer games. And because it's so much harder to organize an 11 versus an 11, and it takes so much space that you're taking up a lot of space that can be used for other stuff. But if you have basketball courts and small sections where kids can play 4v4 or 5v5, not only is it easier, but it takes less kids to play.
Right.
I mean, most of these parks that do have a full field available, they have those goals that are in the ground and they're not going nowhere. If a group of six kids show up to play, eight kids show up to play, which nowadays getting eight kids together on the street isn't as common, they can't play. You get kids and they can, and on a court, you might be able to play 3v3 and be out there for a few hours. But how do you play full field with eight kids, even 10 kids? You know, 10 kids, you got some what we call in Mexico retas, meaning, hey,
I know that. Where
is it? You lose, you're off. And in Mexico, you see it all the time. Retas everywhere, pickup. But it's not 11 versus 11. If you go to Brazil and you go to Spain and you go to some of these other countries, the reason they're good, it's not because of 11v11. It's because the 4v4s, 3v3s, and 5v5s, they played on the street in small areas that gave them this technical ability. And that's that age that we talked about earlier. Hey, all the way up to 12. All these players that played on the streets from birth until 10 years old, they will always be head and toes advantage over every other kid, no matter how many training sessions, how many private trainers, how many, any of that. And it's being able to create that street soccer. And it doesn't, I mean, if we can get those type of basketball goals that could be multifunctional, because there's space for basketball court just about any park in the country.
Yeah, I know that here I've only seen two areas just like that. There's one, I believe, in Oak Cliff, where it's outdoor urban soccer that I think they have 2 to 3 little tiny fields. They're like 6v6, 7v7 max, if at all. I think there might be even 4v4. They have those and it's open. And Hearst, there's another one, but it's at a Texas Boys Ranch or something like that. And it's, I think, an outdoor pool that was converted into a small field like that. Those are the only two places I've seen. Some cities have even taken away all the ghost posts. Like at Everman, we used to use a field in Everman off of Wichita. And that one was lighted. It was free. It was open. It had goals. And coaches can, and players can take, you know, two sticks or whatever, like we do in Mexico. Just anything is a goal. And but they took it down. They took the goals down. They don't even use the field anymore. And they upgraded their basketball court. And it says in big, bold letters, not to be used for any other sport other than basketball. It's crazy. And the areas that need to develop more, that need it more, they take them away.
Yeah. And for me, when I was in California growing up, we played literally in the street. And when I moved here, we got, I mean, I was blessed, you know, we were able to move to Haslett, Texas 15, 20 years ago when nobody wanted to be in Haslett. Now, all of a sudden, everybody wants to be in Haslett.
Yeah.
But I was blessed that the community that I lived in had a hockey ring. Boy, them hockey rings are the best thing ever. I mean, that's what you're looking for. And me and my brothers grew up playing pickup soccer games on a hockey ring with a tiny field, with a tiny goal, no goalies. And I mean, you're getting nothing but street touches. And if you fall, that shit hurts. You don't want to fall. You're not diving. Exactly. You're not like if you do a move and you step on the ball and you fall, you're spraining your wrist. You're breaking a finger. So it gets to the point where you attempt things and you try things, but you try them with a different caution. You know, it's nowadays it's so easy for kids to go to the ground. It's annoying sometimes. It's like, dude, it's not even a foul. Stay on your feet. Stay on your feet. And it's like, hey, you playing in rough surfaces and in bad terrains, you don't want to go down. I remember my dad used to get mad. I was a center forward, and my dad made it all the time. Tírate. I'm like, Dad, that shit hurts. I do not want to dive in the box. I don't care if I'm getting hit. I prefer to score a goal. I don't want to go down. You come over here and fall on this ground. And it's like, that's a whole nother world.
Yeah, and that's where a lot of these players, that's where they come from, because they have to be more cautious. They develop different muscles that they wouldn't normally develop. That's why some of these players that come from the poor places, you look at their legs and they're huge way even before they start the proper training. Like me, I was able to be so technical at a younger age because I'm from Mexico City, but my family, my grandfather, they grew up in a smaller town where our field, it was a full-size soccer field, but it was made out of dirt and gravel. My dad would take me out there to work on my dives, proper diving positioning, proper collapsing technique. And you better believe I had to learn, because if I landed the wrong way, oh, that gravel hurt.
For days.
That gravel hurt.
not at the moment, but for days.
Exactly. You know, and out there is people still play out there. And I watch some of these videos from the town, and these players, the way they move and the way they dribble the ball, the way they center it and cross it, the way these keepers dive, and it's so effortless. But you take them to a grass field, they get a little confused, and they end up doing great. But it's, you know, it's the environment that they grow up in. We need more areas like that here. Out here, you can't play anywhere because cops get called, child protective services get called. Oh, you're letting your kids play outside with all these cars, this and that. You know, heaven forbid. But they need to have more areas where they can just play. You can go to a park right now, I guarantee there's no more than 5 or 6 people or kids playing. They're all at home.
They're all home in front of video games.
With the AC, it didn't matter how hot it was. I did not want to be during the day. I did not want to be in my mom's eyesight on the TV.
Yeah.
I'm drinking out of people's hoses. I don't even know, but I'm not coming home until it starts getting dark. And nowadays,
just what you're saying, Gio, the retas, you know, you go out there, play. Everybody gather their coins here and there, and the loser gets to buy the Coke. Everybody gets to drink. Everybody gets to drink. Not just the winners. Even the losers get a sip.
Yeah, they just get first dibs.
Exactly. I mean, that's how it was. That's what I grew up in as well. But you know, it's like I don't see that anymore. Period.
But how do you create that culture then?
It's just by creating more spaces for them to play.
Yeah.
That's the number one thing, because you see a kid, he'll go to the park. Even on social media, let's put it like this: a kid that has a lot of social media, that has a lot of friends but doesn't do anything outside, he'll go into the park. He'll see something. Oh, look, he'll post it. Look at this. This is cool. And then he'll play for a little bit. He'll invite some friends out there. His friends will tell more friends. Word of mouth, it gets around. Next thing you know is you have maybe a group of 15, 20. Start making little teams. Start playing. It all starts with providing the places, the safe place for these kids to play. Now everybody's worried about, I don't know about y'all, but how many Amber Alerts have you not gotten recently? You know,
at least one a day.
At least safe places where these kids can go out and have fun and develop and just experience outdoors. There isn't. There really isn't any place. YMCA has a really good program that does that.
The YMCA in North Fort Worth has a really good soccer fields now, but they were given to them by the city. They maintain them.
And there's some more fields in Fort Worth that are not used. They are off Alta Mesa. They are seldomly used, and they use them for rugby now. But they're open. They have lights. I'm telling you, there's so many fields that could be turned into something that can be used for these youth, but it just doesn't get done. But I know they want to build a brand new stadium in Fort Worth, right? A soccer field, I think, or some fields. I mean, they want to do that, but hey, I bet those kids are going to be able to use them.
So this is getting out of territory because I feel like as a parent, like I think my family is unique because we dive into whatever our kids' activities are. Our kids, we lived our life as a youth, and now it's our kids to live their life and us to give them the chances to live theirs. I don't think a lot of parents have that mentality either. So for us to go sit at a park with our kids to go play soccer for 2 or 3 hours, I'm fine with it. My wife is fine with it. We have to alternate and we'll go do it. But the problem is that all has to be organized, and kids just don't show up to the park. Like you guys are saying, like at least young kids, maybe teenagers might, but like you, Gio, you said, like, you didn't want to be in your mom's line of sight in front of the TV. I grew up in Northern New York. I grew up in farm country. There's more cows in the county than there is people. So you were gone once you woke up in the morning. You didn't come home until dinner. You pack yourself a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or whatever you want for lunch, and you were gone. You didn't reappear until it was dinner time. And then you were gone again after dinner doing another activity. And we don't, like you said, you don't have that, like the Amber Alerts and having safe places. So does this mean the city needs or organizations need to have facilities then to help facilitate this? Or how do you facilitate it then?
Definitely. That's what needs to happen. Some of these organizations need to just make facilities available. Let's see, there's in Fort Worth, there's another small area where some fields are available that they open them up, but that's the only one I know of. I know there's a, what is it called for the city that plans all this?
Urbanomics. What is it? Planning Council. Yeah.
Okay. So that urban part of the planning for the city, they need to do something, actually. Get out there. There's a lot of these areas that could be used, and they need to make it happen. Just how they do all these campaigns for all this other stuff that is really nonsense, we need to make this happen because our youth, it's our future. It's just like I tell the parents, you know, I'm only going to coach for so long because I'm coaching the next coach, and I'm trying to show them the way that I coach, but then they can change it to fit the next generation. These older coaches are all good, but it needs to change. Their mentality is still not changing. I mean, that just all needs to go down the road.
Oh my God.
Definitely need to get these urban organizations to be more about the actual community. They need to get involved out there more. I haven't seen any of these big clubs do anything for the community. None of them. I haven't seen any of them volunteer at any shelters, take food to any of these shelters, clothing, nothing. And that's where it starts. They need to realize that there are areas out there that aren't like where they stay, that aren't developed. There's kids out there that don't even have access to a ball. We used to play with a can when we didn't have a soccer ball. But there definitely needs to be more development to make things happen so this is available for everybody. Because I'm telling you, once the soccer truly blows up in our area, it is going to be something amazing.
I mean, there's a reason why that stadium you mentioned, that there's a reason why these big investors want to come to this area so bad. And it was Fort Worth, and they were trying to build it here. And then, you know, Mansfield's in the talks as well. Arlington as well, because they're trying to stay in that corner, in that pocket, somewhere between that area. Because in the original conversations, I know I got the opportunity to sit in on a few of these meetings and be a part of the beginning of this. They know, dude. They know. They know this is the pocket.
If it... So I'm going to give you the conversation that we've had, I've heard recently too, is if you want soccer to develop, so you have FC Dallas, they struggle getting people in the seats. It's not because people don't want to go watch the games. It's all the way in Frisco from Keller. It's a 45-minute drive with no traffic. Throw in the traffic for a game, it's an hour and 15 minutes. I mean, you know that, Gio. I mean, you've driven there quite a few times in our conversations to go watch matches. Hey, Skyler. Hey, guys. Skyler Simmons just joined. He is from Cross City Soccer Club.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for having me.
If you want to give a quick intro so these Gio and Frank know who you are and the listeners can know who you are also eventually.
For sure. So my name is Skyler Simmons. I am one of the co-owners of Cross City Soccer Club. We train out in Allen. We're a little 13-team club going on. Just recently opened up in 2022. So we're after 1 year of starting up, we've been pretty happy with everything. But yeah, new up and coming club over there in the Allen area. I've been in the North Texas landscape for some time as a player for Longhorn Soccer Club way back in the day when that was still around. And then we moved off and became FC Premier. Then I went and played college ball, went and played overseas, and then now back here where it all started.
So Scott, to give you a really quick catch up, we're talking about how the cities need to do more, the communities need to do more. And now we're talking about how the clubs need to do more on facilitating facilities for kids to just go out and play soccer. And Gio was just talking about sitting in meetings with the development. And I was talking about the issue is that FC Dallas is clear on the other side of town and people from Keller won't drive the 45 minutes to go watch them play because it's a 45-minute drive.
Well, and that's, hey, and that's even people in Frisco don't go out to the FC Dallas games. I mean, you've seen the attendance towards the lower end of MLS standards. So not only is location kind of tough, but in general, I think the community outreach with FC Dallas is, you know, below par and below standard of many of the MLS clubs in United States.
And a lot of it we've talked about has been, to give you a really quick recap, it is, and if you guys want to join in and help me, we talked about how to change soccer here. And it's getting, we talked about how leagues are and how already, and how it's, teams are not part of it. And how do you get more teams part of more leagues and that make it, and how we have such a large, the capitalism market type of thing has worked where like teams have to be part of, oh, crud, I'm losing my train of thought.
The league.
Yes, Gio?
You were saying the team need to be a part of those leagues, no?
Yeah, it's the team. Like, there's like ECNL and all of them. Like, they're being excluding teams that could probably take them on and beat them. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, there are so much talent here, and we're talking about how do you get more talent out in the field, some playing, and we're talking about how the cities aren't planning soccer fields. They aren't building small 3v3. Frank talked about how they had basketball courts that also could be used for basketball and soccer, and how none of that is really here in North Texas or in the United States, and how do we foster that, and how now we're talking about how we don't see these clubs giving back to the community. We don't see these clubs going back and showing they're part of it because they just don't do it. I know that I can speak kind of for Chio on this. They have skills nights on Friday nights, and let me tell you, my kids love it. My daughter's part of the club, but my son is not, but Lannon's welcome to it. And that just shows you that the importance of skills for these, just the activity of soccer and how much they give back and how do we get that from everywhere else. And Frankie, I think I've butchered this now enough. And Gio, sorry. Try and catch Skyler caught up here, but we were talking.
Yeah, no, yeah, I appreciate you catching me up. And, you know, I think it's a really important topic that you're bringing about. You know, here's the thing, and it's interesting. There's two different directions we can go with this. Obviously, we can go with the one that many people are noticing, especially small club owners and small club coaches about the leagues. And then the other side of it, of just the large impact of soccer in the communities and how little is being done. You know, I have kids on my club teams that, you know, are 15, 16 ask me, hey coach, where can we find a field with a soccer goal? We just want to get, you know, take some shots, practice our free kicks. And the answer to that is there's not many. And the fields that are available are usually torn to bits, and it's just, you're not going to get a good little private training session out of it. Or the ones that aren't torn to bits are private with fences around it, and you get kicked off the moment you get on it. So it's two pretty big subjects, both of which hurts soccer in the long term in this country and in this area. I think this could be the most talented, it has the largest pool of talent in all of the United States for soccer. You've seen that with FC Dallas and how many homegrown players they've had. But I think it's not even utilizing the top 2% of how much talent's in this area, because we don't have soccer available to everyone. It's very elite mentality, which with that elitism means you only get a certain amount of people that one can afford it, or two, you know, are being forced into a corner of one, two, three clubs, maybe. And three is probably even a stretch. It's probably just two clubs that can get people to that next level. And that's all because of the elitist mentality, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's exactly what we were talking about, about just making it affordable for everybody to be able to play. There is so much talent everywhere, but specifically more than not, it's in this area out here in the Fort Worth area, Forest Hill, where it's completely overlooked. Well, not overlooked, because once those players get seen, they get taken to these bigger teams. They're playing Dallas and Frisco and Allen everywhere. It's just making it accessible to the area here. As far as fields, in our area, we have dozens and dozens of fields. It's just closed.
Yep.
And some of the clubs don't even get a chance to use them. Some of the schools, they're closed. They won't even allow you to even go practice in their grass fields or play in their grass fields. This is one of the very few areas, well, here in Texas, that I've noticed that all fields are closed, period. They want to charge you $35, $45 just to play there. But, I mean, where does that leave all the kids, all the players?
You can rent the fields.
Yeah. I mean, it's sad. It really is sad with so many fields that we have. They go unused because everybody wants to make money. If they don't make money, then they're going to stay unused. When I grew up, school fields were open, all of them. And that was, I grew up in the area. I graduated from Lamar High School in Arlington in 2002. All the fields were open in that area. We had parks that had really good fields. They could be rented to play games, but all the fields were open during that time. I don't know when the change really happened that they started closing everything down. This was way before COVID. I came back to the area in 2006-07, and everything was completely shut down. No fields available for anybody.
Yeah, it's really strange that way. It feels like I graduated high school in 2013 at Keller High School. And even then, it seemed like I can, you know, pop out to my high school field and, you know, train, you know, practice free kicks, practice PKs, you know, just kind of go through the motions of stuff. And it was easily accessible. And that was, you know, 2013, 2012, 2011, when I was doing that. And now, you know, I've moved out to the Dallas side of things, but in on the Fort Worth side, it seemed there was some options. And nowadays, and especially on the Dallas side, since I've been here, there's close to none. They're not only just locked up, but they're heavily guarded. I had a private lesson at this field that no one uses, and has two soccer goals set up. And within 2 minutes of me putting my boots on and going out to the grass, it's, hey, get off the field. It's a liability issue. And it's like, no one's out here. Why do you have this green space, these goals that cost hundreds and hundreds of dollars in field development that costs thousands upon thousands, and you don't want anyone on it? And it's exactly that. People are worried about liability issues. And I understand it, because in this day and age, everyone's trigger happy with the lawsuits. But at the same time, you know, the big picture about soccer in this area just seems to be the focus of the hyper focus of money. You know, who's gonna get how much for this amount? You know, the field space is such a premium that even if it is a public field, if you don't get out there at like 3 o'clock to set up your little 50 by 50 grid, then there's just not enough space for you. So it's just tough. There's definitely a premium around the entire North Texas area for practice space, for just plain playing space, for just pickup space. All of it is tough.
Yeah. And when I still had my men's team, I would rent a field in Arlington. And I would leave it open, and I would advertise this open to anybody who wanted to go, any age, just to play. My players weren't using it. I would open it. But then what happened? A big club came by, they took over the lease, and they didn't allow that anymore because they weren't making any money out of it. I was renting these fields for maybe like $60 for like 4 hours with lights, without lights, whatever I wanted. Now that just gives the kids in that area no option to play in. It's sad.
Now we have talked about from leagues, the facilities, and a little bit of advice for parents. As we're moving through this progress of where to go and what to do, we started bashing on parents, and sadly that's where this all comes back to. Until us as parents start advocating for our cities to open these facilities up, open up school grounds. I know that Len will go run the track at Timber Creek or Keller because it's open, but heaven forbid if you go out there and kick a soccer ball on the turf, or heaven forbid you go kick a ball on the grass field over there. I get it, like there is the liability, but at the same time it goes back to parents taking responsibility for their kids' actions. And at times, I don't even think it's the problem being sued. It's the problem of kids not respecting the property and ripping it up. And once again, that goes back to the parents. It goes back to the parents and teaching parents, hey, this is not your property. You need to keep it with respect. If you ruin it, you'll lose it. And that's, I think that's what's happened, is that parents aren't taking responsibility for their kids in order to have the nice things again. And until we are willing to kind of take responsibility, I think what you talked about, the gravel dirt field, might be the only option to give kids, because they really can't ruin it anymore. And, or having those urban settings where they can play 3v3 or 4v4 on concrete, where you can't really break anything. I mean, the goal is the goal. I mean, you can't break it. We have basketball courts that aren't being used. We have pickleball courts that are being, that are being created, but they're only being used for certain times of the days, because they're used in the evenings because it's cooler here in Texas for that. But during the day, they aren't being used. And like you said, like parents will be called on by CPS. Someone call in that their kids are out there playing in 100 degree weather. I'm sorry, but this has been going on for hundreds of years. We've been playing in hot weather and cold weather and whatever it may be. And it's, as long as the kids are being taken care of, there's nothing wrong with them. Let them be outside and playing. I don't know as a parent what more to do. It's like, I can only speak from a 9-year-old level. That's the oldest my kid is. I mean, Frank, you said you had much older kids than my kids. So you've been through this process with them. It's teaching them to be respectful and responsible for things. And us as parents, when they break something, either going out and fixing it ourselves or writing the check to have it fixed correctly, whatever it may be. I don't see us, our society changing until parents take responsibility, like we talked about earlier.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that's not the root of, I'm not going to say the root of all evil, but it's the base where the soccer system starts. Leagues are created, parents sign up. Teams are created, parents sign up. If this is just a demand. Until the parents actually put their foot down, realize what they need to do, and like Gio and I were discussing, and you, Ian, they need to really be serious about what they want to do. Is it for me or for the kids? You know, that's where it starts. That is the very first question that needs to be asked when they want to start playing soccer. Not everybody needs to play club right away. Go get your feet wet. Go do rec. Go do something. Several recreational leagues, nonprofit leagues. Do that. See if it's for you. Stop spending so much money that'll keep adding to this problem. But we can be hopeful.
Myself. So you talked about rec, and I think this is where the elitist mentality comes from. Rec is not good enough. In my mind, it's like rec is where you go to figure out if you like it. And if you like it, you stay. I think the issue with some of the issues with rec is the advice I was given when it comes to goal. You may have a different opinion, Frank, but the best advice I was given was for a goalie. If they want field time, go play rec. Don't say that you're a goalie. Go play rec. Go learn how to play the field in the rec level. You might translate to something in the club level, but the coaches have to be willing to let their player to go play in a rec league, because that's something they want as a player. And I was like, that's a brilliant idea. It's not going to hurt them. It's not going to be super intense. They have a chance of getting seriously hurt, but it's a level that they can go learn in, at least how to handle the ball, that might make them a better goalie. What's your stance on that type?
For me, is every player should play everywhere, period. It's nobody knows what they're. I wanted to be, I think, striker when I first started playing. That's not where I ended up, because that's not where I was really good at. It's, they need to be more open-minded. They might want to play forward, striker, midfield, defender, keeper, but they need to experience everything. Until, I mean, y'all can disagree with me, but until they're 13, 14 years old, they shouldn't have a real set position, because they haven't developed enough to know what exactly they're the best at. And that's my opinion. Until that age, I play everybody everywhere. I experiment here and there, practice, scrimmages, games. Turns out sometimes they are better in other positions and sometimes they're not, but they need to experience everything. And then from 13, 14, then they can truly concentrate on whatever they're doing, they want to do. They're not going to get looked at by colleges until they're, I think, what, 15, 16, 16, 17, sophomore, junior year?
Junior year, June 16th. I could be wrong. Skyler could probably correct me on this.
So, I mean, that's around the age where they really need to get focused on the position. Until then, you only do two things in soccer. You attack and you defend. Every position does that. So when I have a player telling me, oh, I'm not a defender, I only play forward. When you lose the ball, you just let it go or you try to win it back? Try to win it back. Okay, well, you play defense too. Get back there and give me something. Give me 20 minutes, see what you can do. But not everybody has that mentality. Coaches these days will play you where you work best for them. Not for the player, but for them as coaches and their egos and their records and their trophies. That's unfortunately how it is now. I mean, people can disagree with me, but that is my way of thinking.
I think the only reason I can use this example because I follow them close enough, and it's at the pro level. I'll take FC Dallas. They just signed a college grad this year. He was a striker. He was a wing, a forward. And now they're trying to teach him how to be a left back or a right back. I can't remember his position, what side of the field. But they're trying to teach him to play defense because he has speed. And FC Dallas, I found out, is notorious for this, is that they'll take players and try to retrain them to play a different position based on the profiles that they're seeing that they'll need in the future. I don't know if all clubs do this at that high level and not just take them for what their natural talent is. I mean, you're talking about a 22-year-old. I mean, he still has so much more to give in the grand scheme of things of the game. But I find that very fascinating. They even do that in the academy levels where they'll take a player that will just bounce around for a long time and not really, especially with someone that has talents. I mean, I can use Gio knows who I'm going to talk about next is Nolan Norris. For North Texas Soccer Club, he plays left back. For FC Dallas, he's playing midfield. They don't know what to do with him because he's not done growing, but he's only 18 years old. And I feel like you're just, even at the pro level, they bounce him around trying to find him where they might be great at. And this 22-year-old that they just signed, I can't think of his name. I can see his face. They've been playing in midfield because they've been missing all their midfielders. But he's doing a phenomenal job in the midfield in his natural position, I think, as a fan watching him play. And I think you're right, Frank, is that no player should be held to one spot. I think having them bounce around, I joke with Landon, he's not a striker and he's not a goalie. Those are the only two positions I don't recommend for him to play. It's just not what he's good at. Will he go play it if you ask him to? Yes. Tell him what you want him to do. But I think that is, as his parents, we joke with him about it. But if a coach puts him as striker, go for it, Landon. We don't care. The only thing I advise you, don't put him as goalie because he won't care if he wins or lose. A ball goes by him, he won't care. But that's me knowing my child. Yeah. But at the same time, it's, I don't care what position you need him to play. If you need him to go play goalie because there's no goalie today, great. He'll go play it for you. But don't expect him to stop balls because that's not what he does. He is a defender and he's a midfielder and he's a forward, he's a wing. But I know he struggles with, as a parent watching him, he's never played that role of a striker. But everything else on the field, he's played that role. But me as a parent, we've told him never to pick one spot. He has the positions he likes to play. But as a parent, I think that comes back to the parents. Going back to the parents taking responsibility for their players. Don't let your player get stuck in the mind that you're a striker or you're a forward or whatever it is. You have to go out there and hustle and prove you deserve to be on the field in the first place. And that's what we tell Landon, is like, you have to go prove you're good at what you're doing. Who cares what position? You have to prove you deserve to put a foot on that pitch. Until that day, there's no point of telling them where you're good at. You have your strengths and your weaknesses, but Frank, like you said, it comes back, and Gio said, it's like it comes back to the parents' responsibilities to tell their players.
Mm-hmm. Well, your son might surprise you at goalie. You might want to let him give it a shot, because the way this position has evolved throughout the years, it's no longer just about blocking a shot. he doesn't even have to stop it close to the goal. There's a lot of footwork now, you know. So does your has your son ever played baseball or anything like that?
He gave up on baseball because it was too slow.
Okay, well,
I mean,
so he's got throwing experience. You know, they have the bowling throws, they have overhand throws. So, I mean, it's more than just standing in the goal and just blocking shots down these days. So I agree, give him a shot. You never know.
We'll let him play. It's just that when the coaches ask us our opinion, it's like he'll play anywhere you put him.
Yeah, no,
I get watching him play.
Yeah, sometimes it's like my 6-year-old son, because I volunteer coaching his rec team. I have everybody play in the goal, and I know he's horrible at it. He just sit there and he'll cry when the ball goes by. But I ask, you want to play keeper? Yes, me. Okay, there you go. I already know the outcome, but you know, at that age, you have to let him experience everything. And you have to let them bounce back from them. You can't coddle them, because then that's where you have these issues later on.
Right. And that's the thing. It's trying to figure out as a parent. And this is where I think my goal was with this. Went all over the place. I didn't tell the story I wanted to today. But I feel like as parents, this is what parents really need to hear, is letting them do what they need to do. And telling their players, like, I as a coach, when I coached for the short stint that I did, I was tired of hearing, like, I'm only an attacking player. I go, you're six. Where's this coming from? I only want to shoot goals. Yeah, you're playing 4v4. Everyone will shoot goals. the field's only I used to have it memorized, 30 yards by 15 yards. It's not that big. So it's teaching, like, I think we as parents embed in our kids our idea of who they are. I don't know what advice you'd give. I mean, the advice I give is just let your kid play and figure it out on their own. Every player has a profile. They will meet their profile. Is there any messages you guys would like to share with families that could possibly help them, or advice you could give right now? And we can wrap this up and give you back, you guys, at least a half hour.
I'll start us up. So the main message I want everyone to hear, you know, especially with how North Texas soccer landscape is changing, don't chase the badge on the uniform, chase the experience and the memories that it creates. Ensure that the child is being challenged, ensure that the child is creating friendships, and ensure that he is growing or she is growing in the sport. The league that you play in doesn't always necessarily mean that you grow.
Thank you. Well, it's here. Franker.
Yeah. I will second that. I think he hit the nail right on the head. And just to add to that, don't forget why you're doing what you're doing and who it's for. Pushing for top leagues, if it's not what's best for your kid, no matter how much you say you love your kid, at that point you're doing it for yourself, not for them. Because what they need is a coach that cares about them. What they need is playing time. What they need is to understand the concepts and learn the lessons he's supposed to learn at that age. And let's not restrict our kids from doing that because of a badge, like Skylar said. So just to add on to that.
Yeah, I mean, both of y'all pretty much got everything. Bottom line, just trust the process. Let them go through the entire process. Don't push them when they don't need to be pushed, and just support them. That is so important. Support your player, your child, your daughter, your son. Just support them. Unconditional support. That's all they really need from you. They don't need you to yell at them, oh, do this. No, support them. Be there for them. And you'll be amazed how far that takes it. But yeah, I mean, they pretty much covered everything else. Don't play for the badge. Let them have fun. The moment it's not fun anymore for them, and they'll be miserable and they'll stop playing. And you just keep wasting your money.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Chat by the Pitch. This week's episode was a lot of fun, as last week, as it's a continuation of the chat from last week. Now, as you guys listen to it, I hope you guys picked up on the big things, and I'm not trying to be mean or rude or turn any of you guys off, but at the end of the day, it all comes back to us as parents. What we want, we move that needle in the direction that these clubs and these leagues and everything else that happens, we move that needle in the direction, good or bad. We have to take charge and take the reins in and figure out what we want to spend our money on, for our kids to develop. And at the end of the day, I think there's a reoccurring message with everything that we've been hearing lately. It's development, 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 which is an overused word. And same with elite and all these other words they use in our community. But if we really want our kids to advance in this game, we as parents have to start dictating what we want from these clubs. Not the coaches, the clubs. Because the coaches, our hands are tied by clubs. And the clubs are dictating by what we want as parents to what leagues or elite leagues we want to call them, whatever it may be. At the end of the day, you don't have to be in the top tier leagues to play. I mean, there's so many great players out there to not play at the top that were found and now are playing at the highest level here in the United States in the MLS or playing overseas. It comes down to us making the effort to make sure our players are being developed. And if we can take time to realize what our players need versus our want for social media or our want to brag. And let me tell you, it's hard. We all want our kids to be successful. But I hope you guys take their messages as advice and encouragement and things that we need to do. Until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.